Well, it's no secret, is it, that iron ore is Australia's most valuable export. Big mining companies like BHP, Rio Tinto and even Fortescue have been digging hard and fast in WA's Pilbara, extracting close to 900 million tonnes of the stuff just last financial year, and in monetary terms, that's the better part of $130 billion in exports in just 12 months. Staggering. And who's buying all the red gold? Well, in one word, it's China. However, China is actively looking for alternative iron ore deposits. New iron ore locations would obviously increase global supply, and that would put downward pressure on the price per tonne, which the Chinese buyers would be more than happy with. But strategically, and this is where this is key, non-Australian mines would be the most effective economic lever China could ever hope to pull if in future they want to punish Australia for whatever transgression they believe we have effected. Now, as Reuters reported just the other week, China's push into Guinea in, I suppose you would say, central West Africa, is already underway. However, as Nick Evans, the resource writer for The Australian, wrote the other day, China's Pilbara killing ambitions in Africa go beyond Guinea. In fact, a deal signed between the government of Cameroon in that same part of Africa and Ost-Sino Resources last weekend appears to, as Nick says, cement Chinese control of a group of iron ore projects which have been stripped from Australian and British resource companies. Now, I suppose you put that together with the Guinea story and you've got the better part of 300 million tonnes of iron ore potentially coming out of Africa heading to China, not coming out of the Pilbara. What does this all mean going forward? Well, I wanted to chat to Nick Evans, and he's on the line. Nick, g'day.
G'day, Michael, and g'day to your listeners.
100 million tonnes a year from this. There's reports that maybe 200 million tonne a year could come out of Guinea. So there's about a third of what we produced last year out of WA. It wouldn't kill the Western Australian or Australian economy, but it'd do some damage, wouldn't it?
It would if it came to reality, yeah. Look, I mean, these are, to be fair, some years away. And yeah, I think the threat is real, but not necessarily existential, if you know what I mean. But certainly it is very clear that China is shaping up to spend an awful lot of money in Africa to open up new iron ore provinces. Much as Japan helped, Brazil sort of get its iron ore operations up in the 70s, when they were having problems in the Pilbara.
Yeah, I mean, we're benefiting, aren't we, at the moment? You mentioned Brazil, from the fact that Brazil are having all sorts of trouble extracting iron ore under the current arrangements there. And so that's taken a big chunk out of the market. That's helped push up global prices. And, well, we're the big player in town, and so we're benefiting. But any diversification of that market would obviously add more iron ore to the global stockpile, which would bring down the price.
Yeah, and absolutely. And the other thing to remember, of course, is that Brazilian iron ore, as a rule, is of higher grade and better quality than what comes out of the Pilbara. And we've used all of our absolutely top-notch stuff, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. And, the sort of the grade that is coming out of the Pilbara is a little bit less than it used to be. Yes. And African iron ore, particularly Simandou, is better than the Brazilian stuff. Both are further away from China, so they'll be relatively high cost compared to Australian iron ore. But, 300 million tonnes and potentially more. I mean, not so far from these deposits that have taken off sort of Australian and British companies is another fairly large deposit. If that was sort of targeted, that could add yet more to it, and there's certainly plenty around in Africa of pretty high-grade stuff.
Yeah, I mean, these African projects, though, Nick, seem to be showing the muscle of the Chinese state enterprise, don't they? Because on the one hand, you got miners, and they're going in cahoots sometimes with Australian miners and sometimes other international mining conglomerates. But then you've got the Chinese State Rail Corporation building the tracks across vast, 500-kilometre stretches of land and all the rest of it to get the stuff from the mine to the port. And then you've got the Chinese meddling around building ports and who knows. So it's the whole supply chain really being directed from Beijing, isn't it?
If it happens, I have to say. I mean, chances are, I think Simandou, there's very little doubt in the industry that Simandou will happen. I'm sort of less convinced that the Congo and the Cameroon deposits will get developed as easily. I mean, it's a pretty expensive and pretty tough set of country to build across. And, we know from in China that, Chinese companies can build very fast, but Africa's a pretty difficult place to operate in.
Yep.
You know, I mean, there'd be plenty of sort of startups in Sierra Leone and other places where people have really struggled to sort of actually make them work and make money afterwards. But, it, you know, no doubt it seems to be developing pretty quickly over there.
Now, you've mentioned in your piece, and you've said it to me here as well this morning, that some of these iron ore deposits were stripped from Australian and British resource companies. Tell me a bit about that.
So I've got a certain amount of sympathy for the governments here as well. I mean, I was reporting on the Sundance deposit back in 2008 when I started reporting on mining. And, you know, some of them, they were certainly going for far longer than that. So these are pretty high-grade deposits that have been sitting in the wings for a very long time, didn't get up in the last boom. And, you know, those governments obviously will be looking at the riches pouring out of the Pilbara and going, well, you know, we've got some pretty good resources here. Why aren't our people benefiting as well? And, you know, so there's a certain amount of sympathy for sort of them wanting those companies that have been, you know, sort of working on them for a long time to sort of get a hurry on. But essentially what's happened is that late last year, December last year, the Republic of Congo government gave notice to Sundance Resources, which was an ASX-listed company until late last year, to a British company called Avima, and to a small Australian-listed gold company, largely gold, called Equatorial Resources, which had a exploration permit, basically saying, you haven't done what you said you were going to do. We're taking them off you. We're going to remove the mining rights. They were promptly handed over to this sort of unknown Congolese-registered company. And, you know, the speculation at the time was that sort of, you know, Chinese interests were behind that. Then that certainly seems to have been borne out. But not long after that, it was revealed that this, you know, sort of Congolese registered company was actually backed by a Hong Kong registered company. Of course, now Osino, who was trying to do a deal with Sundance to put some money into this, and were promising to bring in a whole bunch of big state-owned Chinese enterprises into it. Signed a couple of weeks ago, a deal with the government of Cameroon to build a port and rail.
I'd imagine some of this is going to go before the courts, though, wouldn't it? I mean, if you've had big Australian and British interests stripped of their quote-unquote right, they're not going to take that lightly.
Yeah, arbitration courts are not so much not necessarily the Australian legal system, or that might wind up down here, but both Avima and Sundance have lodged action in the international arbitration courts. So, you know, with fairly big claims, but, you know, I guess it'll take a while before those sort of flow through, and because they're arbitration rather than, you know, legal courts, we won't see any of that until it comes out the other end with an agreed decision. So,
all right, now let's just put our crystal ball on the table. Let's assume all of this does go ahead, and in say the next 5 or 6 or 10 years or whatever, there's 300 odd million tons of iron ore coming out of these combined African ventures, no doubt all heading to China. That's 300 million tonnes of ours that the Chinese may not buy. We've seen recently with the trade sanctions and whatnot, we had trouble getting coal into other markets, but eventually we found secondary markets. They took the coal. That was okay. Are there secondary markets of any scale, though, out there, Nick, that would need upwards of 300 million tonnes of Australian iron ore?
It wouldn't necessarily displace those, you know, all 300 million tonnes, but the iron ore market is still growing and will probably keep growing for a while. But realistically, no. I mean, China is the number one buyer of iron ore in the world, and it's pretty much daylight to number two. I mean, China's buying, you know, more than they're producing 1 billion tons of steel on an annual basis or thereabouts at the moment. And so if you think about, you know, the fact that most iron ore sort of grades about 60%, you can, you know, it's not hard to do the maths they're buying 1.4, 1.5 billion tons of iron ore from somewhere, some in China, but most elsewhere. And about 70% of China's iron ore, 70 to 80% of China's iron ore supply comes from overseas.
And so with that in mind, what does the WA government think, or are they saying anything about these developments in Africa? Because, I mean, you take iron ore away from the McGowan government, for example, their treasury looks a bit skint.
Yeah, and that's been the case for a while. But, I mean, look, it's difficult. I mean, they certainly haven't made any comment, I don't think, and it's difficult to see them doing so. I guess the other thing, though, is that, you know, this is, even if they started, you know, bulldozing the path of the track tomorrow, you're still talking about 3 or 4 years before, you know, Simandou or any of these come to fruition. And, you know, there's got to be some doubt about whether you know, these are not easy. I mean, if these, I mean, these are great projects in terms of the grade and the actual product that will come out of them. But they were easy to do; they would have been done.
Would have been done.
You know, you've got to, you know, in Guinea, you've got, you know, sort of, you know, hundreds of kilometres, and you know, it's not like sort of building a railway line in relatively flat Pilbara. I mean, it's not, you know, that easy to do it there. But you know, these are 500, 600, 700 kilometres away from the port, and you're dealing with, you know, some, you know, governments that are, you know, in some cases notoriously corrupt. I mean, there's been a long running problem in Central Africa, Guinea. I mean, Rio's still got some investigations running into some of its sort of dealings over there, you know, dating back 5 or 6 years ago. Plenty of other companies had the same thing. And it's not necessarily that easy to operate in Africa, in impoverished countries, unless you bring, you know, the local population on board and they feel like they're getting a fair share. And Rio Tinto, for example, is having real problems in South Africa at the moment. They've had to put one of their mineral sands projects on ice because of the community violence around it. They're operating in a really poor area. They employ about 5,000 people there. But, of course, there's another 20 or 30,000 people there that would quite like to have, you know, jobs and don't have them. And the community unrest has become, you know, a real problem. And that kind of thing happens in Africa. So it's, yes, you can sort of say, we'll spend all this money and we'll do it, but can you get it right? And can you, you know, deliver the kind of volumes at the kind of costs you wanted to? You know, remains to be seen.
Well, we'll wait to see. Great to talk to you, Nick. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Nick Evans there, the Australian newspaper's resource editor.